Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Comic Source. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Marvel Monday episode, and today I'm joined by fellow LRM contributor, Jay, and we're going to be talking about some not-so-recent Marvel comics, but ones that we haven't covered on the show before, although we may have talked about previous issues of these particular series. So the first book we're going to talk about is Dead Man Logan, number 3 of 12, from writer Ed Brisson. We have art by Mike Henderson, colors by Nolan Woodard, and letters by Corey Petit. So I think we've talked about the first two issues of Dead Man Logan on previous Marvel Mondays. Just to kind of remind everybody, because I know it's been a while, what this series is about. So after the regular Logan died, and we had 75 different variations of Wolverine show up, from Honey Badger to X-23 to Dakin, to, you know, old man Logan here, show up, so there would be no shortage of Wolverines in the Marvel universe. It was so weird because, you know, Marvel decides to kill the original Wolverine in the Charles Soule Death of Wolverine series, but then they turn around and bring this old man Logan, and I put that in quotes, basically a cross between sort of a Mad Max, and I can't, who's the other, Clint Eastwood, like the man with no name, is kind of how he's been described to me by Marvel editorial, basically. And so it was like he never left, you know, even though you had this, this death of Wolverine, you had this alternate, which I don't know, maybe they thought they could tell some other stories or what have you. So he had a 50 issue series that also was written by Ed Brisson, and you know, he's not quite as powerful as the Logan who was, you know, hale and hearty. This guy's kind of been through the ringer. He's had one eye that basically he can't see out of, it's blinded, it's just totally white now. One of his claws is like the bone claws instead of the adamantium claws, and he's been alive for so long that even his healing factor is failing him. And so because that's failing him, he's dying of adamantium poisoning, because he has the, you know, the adamantium bonded to his skeleton. So we saw in the end of the old man, or of the old man Logan series, that he took on the Maestro from a alternate reality, you know, that evil despotic version of the Hulk from the future, from the classic Peter David George Perez story, Future Imperfect. Some version of that Maestro came and took over this town. I think it was somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, he took over the town and was starting to establish a base here in our reality. And so Old Man Logan basically takes him out, cuts off his head, as he himself is sort of succumbing to the adamantium poisoning that was coursing through his veins, and collapses after cutting off the Maestro's head, collapses in the snow. Well, Dead Man Logan story is basically just continuing that story. I'm not even sure why Marvel created it as a separate series with a separate title. I feel like they could have just kept going with that series with that numbering. But maybe they just wanted, you know, number one, or I'm just not really sure why they separated it. But this is basically telling us, so this is his last stand, right? He knows he's a dead man, thus the name Dead Man Logan. So we saw in the first issue, the X-Men went out there, they found him in the snow, they brought him back to the school, they healed him up. He was unconscious for 11 days, and you know, he knows that he has very little time left, like maybe less than a year. And he has been taking this this serum called Regenerex, which kind of boosts his it boosts his healing factor to kind of keep the adamantium poisoning at bay. But the problem is it's poisonous. You know, it's kind of the equivalent of taking like chemotherapy or radiation when you have cancer. Yeah, it kills the cancer, but it also kills the good, you know, it kills good cells too. It makes you feel like crap, makes you sick. So it's kind of the same thing. This Regenerex is boosting his healing factor, but it's not good stuff. And so it's that the reason that he's been taking that is sort of to continue this mission. And the mission being that he's got this kill list that he wants to kill the people that are responsible for what happened in his reality to prevent that from happening here. Because in his reality, it was kind of his fault. He killed a bunch of the X-Men, almost all of them, because Mysterio had convinced him that the X-Men were villains. You know, they smelled like the villains. They looked like the villains. And so he killed them. And then when the illusion was finally dropped by Mysterio, he realized he'd killed all the heroes of that Earth. So obviously he wants to take out Mysterio. Maestro was on the kill list, a couple other people. And so even though he knows he has very little time left, he's willing to take Regenerex once or twice more to kind of finish his mission. And so now that Maestro's off the list, he's only left with Mysterio. And that's where we start with this Dead Man Logan series. In that first issue, he's hunting for Mysterio. You know, he wants to find out where he is to be sure that the Mysterio of this reality can't do that to somebody else. You know, like maybe Wolverine's not around and Old Man Logan's not going to be around, but what if he brainwashed somebody else, Namor or you know, someone else? And so he wants to prevent that from happening. Meanwhile, as he's going out and he's searching for Mysterio, he goes to like a criminal underworld bar. And while he's searching, Miss Sinister is able to sort of look into his head and see the reality that he lived through. And it gives her the idea that, hey, why can't I be the one to pull the strings on Mysterio? And so she actually goes and finds Mysterio first before Old Man Logan, along with Hawkeye, who heard that that Logan was out looking for Mysterio and has teamed up with him. But Miss Sinister gets there first, and she takes Mysterio and goes to the new version of Hydra, which is being run by the Red Skull's daughter. And they're going to attempt to kind of use Mysterio as a puppet to get Old Man Logan to kill all the heroes. They basically want to kind of fulfill the reality that happened in Old Man Logan's reality. And so that's where we are. That's what we've seen so far in the first couple issues of Dead Man Logan. So before we get into what's going on in this particular issue, Jay, had you read Dead Man Logan before we were getting ready to prep this?
Oh yeah, I actually got the when it first came out, like every week, the weekly was my pull list. So yeah, I read it already. I enjoy the character. When it first was in Wolverine, his original series, like just like supposed to be like a one shot, but people liked it a lot. So they did like I think like two or three issues in the regular Wolverine run.
Yeah, that was when Mark Millar was on the regular Wolverine title. I think it was actually it could have been a 5 or 6 issue arc. And then he was so popular, yeah, they brought him back when they killed the regular Wolverine.
Right. I just kind of need to how they brought Hawkeye into it, because they had the Old Man Hawkeye series too, because, you know, they kind of were teammates back in the future, I guess you can say, also.
Yeah,
it's cool,
yeah.
To see that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's exactly why Ed Brisson did this. I will say, in the interest of full disclosure, so, you know, if you listen to this podcast for any length of time, people are going to remember I'm a huge Ed Brisson fan. That being said, this is probably the least favorite of the work he's done for me. And granted, I haven't read the whole thing, so maybe it'll get better. But the thing I love about Ed's work is how much he grounds his stuff. And him and I have talked about it when he's been on the show, how much he grounds his stuff and makes it relatable and makes it feel, you know, like there's emotional weight to it. And it's not just reading these fantastical stories about these, you know, fantasy characters, because that's kind of what comic books are, you know, at least when you talk about superhero comics. There's less of that in this series than anything that I've read from him, I feel like. But again, you know, I haven't read the whole thing, so maybe we just haven't gotten there. But let me do a quick recap of issue 3. So we saw at the end of issue 2, Hawkeye and Old Man Logan had kind of gotten a clue for where Mysterio was. They were told that he was in Times Square. And Logan basically goes there and thinks that he sees him and starts to attack. But then it's revealed right at the end that it's actually just some innocent, you know, everyday civilian standing there. And and Old Man Logan is actually falling prey to exactly what he was trying to prevent, where he doesn't want Mysterio to be able to, you know, cast illusions and make him think that these people are people they're not. So he sees this innocent civilian as Mysterio, and he sees the Avengers who are there to guard the civilian because they've been told something's about to go down. Old Man Logan sees them as other members of the Sinister Six. So as this issue starts off, Old Man Logan's attacking them, right? So he's attacking Captain America, and he thinks Captain America's Taskmaster, which, you know, makes sense because Taskmaster has a shield, just like Captain America. And then as Iron Man comes and grabs Old Man Logan and starts flying up in the air with him to keep him away from the civilian, Old Man Logan thinks it's Beetle. And even though these people, these heroes are talking to Logan and saying, hey, what are you doing? We can't let you do this. That's not what Logan hears. He is completely absorbed in the illusion. So they smell like the villains they're supposed to smell like. They look like the villains they're supposed to look like. They sound like the villains they're supposed to look like. And so it doesn't take long as Iron Man has Old Man Logan up in the air that that Logan starts basically using his adamantium claws to literally cut the armor off of Iron Man. He's like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to stay aloft. And then as we turn the page, the scene shifts. We're in what looks like a high-rise apartment overlooking Times Square. And we see Sin there, you know, Red Skull's daughter, Crossbones, who's kind of her right-hand man. We see other agents of Neo Hydra, as they're calling themselves. We see Mysterio. We see Miss Sinister. And they're all saying, hey, you know, this is working great. We should have brought Mysterio in years ago. And what's interesting is Miss Sinister was not – she was not on board for this plan. She was like, okay, we need to recruit other resources. She wanted to get Dr. Doom and Kingpin and other people involved and strike once, you know, in a big event because she wanted the element of surprise. And Sin is more like, ah, let's have some fun with it. Let's do a test run. Let's see what holes there are. And, you know, we can make sure – then we can go recruit people and make sure that it's going to work. So there was some butting heads right from the start with those two women. And you wonder, you know, who's going to come out on top. So, and for Mysterio's part, he's like, he feels like he's in over his head. This is not something he really wanted. In fact, when Miss Sinister went to the, it was a mental health facility where Mysterio was hiding out. And Mysterio was like, no, I'm done with that. I'm tired of getting my butt kicked. And the only reason that Mysterio went along with Miss Sinister was because she told him, well, Wolverine's coming to kill you, basically. So meanwhile, back in Times Square, Hawkeye's trying to explain to the Avengers that, hey, Logan and I, we've been hunting Mysterio because we were afraid that he would do exactly something like he's doing because he did something like this to Logan where he comes from. And the last thing we want is another, you know, X-Men versus Avengers, you know, A versus X type story. So meanwhile, Iron Man's like, well, maybe I can fly him high enough into the atmosphere where he won't have enough oxygen and he'll pass out. But he doesn't think he can get up that high fast enough because Wolverine's cutting the armor off him. So She-Hulk and the Robbie Reyes version of Ghost Rider basically head to Iron Man's rescue. Robbie Reyes uses his car to drive up the side of the building. She-Hulk jumps off, punches out Logan while Robbie Reyes uses his car to kind of scoop up Iron Man before he can fall to the ground. Then the scene shifts to the Xavier Institute in Central Park, where Glob sees that this X-Men vs. Avengers fight is going on. So he heads over to tell Jubilee that who's currently at this time leading the Avengers that this fight is going on. And Jubilee says the same thing. The last thing we need right now is a whole new Avengers versus X-Men thing. You know, what's Logan thinking? And they have a fail safe. Logan, one of the first things Old Man Logan did when he got hooked up with the X-Men of this timeline was he created a weapon for them to use that could basically take him out if this were going to happen. So the X-Men all head out there to try to stop this fight from going on. Meanwhile, as She-Hulk is standing over Logan, he sees her as the Lizard, and there's a little more fighting that goes along. And once again, Logan's about to take out the innocent civilian that he sees as Mysterio. And this time it's Hawkeye that that stops him. He fires. He's like, please don't make me do this. Fires three arrows in his back. And I'm not sure what Logan sees here. It doesn't give us any clue what Logan sees when he turns around to actually look at Hawkeye. At least not at first. But before we can see any of that, the scene shifts back to the villains that are overlooking this. And again, Sin is saying, this is great. The whole world is seeing this. It's awesome. And it's kind of funny. Crossbones is like, this is killing me. They're out there in the wide open. Can I just shoot even one of them? And Sin's like, no, you know, not yet. And meanwhile, Miss Sinister she's still not on board. She's like, we're giving up the chance to rule the world because you wanted to have a little bit of fun. This is ridiculous. And so she says, I need some air, and she starts walking out. And then we see Sin walk out after and said, hey, look, I get why it looks like we're screwing around. This is a huge deal. But if Logan can take down the Avengers, then, you know, we can hopefully use your plan to take out all the heroes. And Miss Sinister's like, you know what? You're a moron, Sin. This isn't how it was supposed to work. You know, we should have got the coalition together with Doom, the Kingpin, Magneto, like everybody. We should have a blueprint. We should have a plan. And you're just a kid with a new toy. And you're running around and you're showing it off. And now we've lost the element of surprise. There's no way we recover from this. This was a one-shot thing. And you wasted it on this. And Sin's like, well, no, because we still have Mysterio. He's our secret weapon, right? And Logan's weak. We could get somebody else. We could, you know, brainwash Thor or Namor or, you know, whoever, and get Mysterio to do his thing on them. And then we'll be fine. We'll send Mysterio on his way. We'll give him like Alaska or something. And he could just, you know, live out his time in peace, and we can rule the rest of the world. And Miss Sinister kind of narrows her eyes and says, no. In the future that this Logan saw, that he lived through, after Mysterio did what he did, they killed him. We got to kill Mysterio. That way he can't do the same thing to us ever. He can never betray us. Haven't you listened to anything that I've told you? And Sin's like, oh, you're right. Well, whatever. I just forgot. I'm going to go get some beer. Need anything? And she goes on her way. But what we see is that actually was never Sin in the first place. It wasn't Sin that followed Sinister out of the apartment. It was Mysterio. And basically what he was doing was he wanted to find out what they had planned for him once they, you know, their use for him had been completed, basically. So meanwhile, back in Times Square, now we see who Logan is seeing Hawkeye as. He sees him as Boomerang. And so the Avengers start teaming up on Logan. And man, I don't know. It would have been interesting to see if this fight had gone to its conclusion. Who might have won? Like, could old man Logan have really taken out all the Avengers, even in his weakened state? But he doesn't end up having to, because the X-Men show up and they use their weapon, whatever it was that old man Logan had helped them create, and he basically just collapses on the ground while he's about to take out Robbie Reyes, who he sees as Jack-O-Lantern. Meanwhile, Mysterio kind of flees the hotel and is trying to escape, just as Sinister realizes that she's been duped. You know, when she walks back into the apartment, Sin is there, and she's like, wait, I was just talking to you in the hall. How did you get back in here before me? And they realize that Mysterio has indeed tricked them. So as the X-Men are gathering up old man Logan, Captain America wants some answers. Like, hold up, you can't just take him. You know, he tore up Times Square. He nearly killed Iron Man. We can't just let you waltz in here and take him. And Jubilee's explaining, look, he had us prepare for this eventuality. We're going to deal with it. And Captain America's like, you know, this is a pretty big danger. We have an obligation to people. And the X-Men are not hearing it. Like, yeah, this is our deal. You know, we have the obligation to Logan. We're not going to let you throw him in some superpowered prison. You know, this is an internal problem, and you have our word that we're going to handle it. And we'll make sure nothing like this happens again. And Iron Man's like, Tony, you're just going to let him walk away? And Iron Man's like, I think we have to trust the X-Men to do the right thing. And I love Tony's answer. He says, well, no one in the history of the world has trusted the X-Men. Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? So Hawkeye, hearing this, says, you know what? You know, Logan told me the X-Men had a failsafe in case this happened. I'll go with them and keep an eye on them and make sure nothing like this ever happens again. And as he walks off, we see in the background, Mysterio has been watching all this sort of unfold. So how bad is Logan hurt? what did the weapon that he helped the X-Men to create, the failsafe or whatever it is, what did it actually do to him? You know, all that remains to be seen. So I am liking the story, but like I said, it's not my favorite Ed Brisson work because it's lacking any sort of emotional impact so far. The other thing is that Mike Hawthorne art for me, just it's okay. It's not really very dynamic, especially in the panel layouts on the page. Everything is just a triangle or a square. There's nothing that overlaps. There's no insets. There's nothing to really draw the eye anywhere. So it's very kind of paint by the numbers art, and the line work isn't super clean. So yeah, it's okay. Same for the colors, the Mike Henderson colors. They're kind of this pastelish looking colors, which I think doesn't serve the art well either. But the problem is the line work's not clean enough to have a brighter color palette. So the art is kind of average at best. But overall, like I said, I am liking the story. It is engaging enough and compelling enough that I'll certainly be back for issue 4. But I just, it's not that I expected more from an Ed Brisson story, because I didn't necessarily have any expectations when this, going into this, because I didn't even know when I started reading Dead Man Logan that it was Ed Brisson. But the other part of it is that this character, Old Man Logan, he's derivative of Wolverine because he's sort of the same character, but it's like you're taking Wolverine and you're making him weaker and you're making him older and you're making him, I don't know, more vulnerable in a way, which I guess all that is supposed to make him more interesting. But to me, it makes him a little less interesting, actually, because he feels like a watered down version of Wolverine to me. And that to me, there's nothing interesting about that. So, yeah. So overall, it was okay. I'll finish reading this till the end. I've had the issues forever. I just haven't gotten to them. So we'll continue to cover the rest of the series on these Marvel Mondays. I know it might be, since you've read the whole thing, Jay, it might be kind of tough, but if you could just talk about this issue, obviously you know how it all turns out, but what were your thoughts on this issue? Can you remember back to when you first read it, what you were thinking about the series?
Well, when I first read it, I was like, well, I know he came from the future, and the part in the story here is they show Forge going to find the time machine. He finds the machine and fixes it, and he takes Wolverine to the past and goes, hey, here's your home, go for it. And he turns around and says, I'm not done yet. He walks back to the past. So Forge follows him. He goes, what are you talking about? He's like, he's still not finished. So he had the opportunity to just go home, but he wasn't ready to go home yet.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that speaks to his heroism in a way, right? That he didn't want to leave his mission unfulfilled.
Right.
But you wonder at some point, like, I suppose it's supposed to read as, okay, well, this is a sacrifice, right? Because yeah, Forge did find the time machine that the version of Maestro from that alternate timeline had, had used to come back, and it was broken, but Forge was able to fix it, supposedly. But it makes you wonder, like, at what point is it heroic and at what point is it selfish? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Is he doing it because he's trying to ease his guilt for having been the problem that or the person that caused that other world to sort of devolve into Mad Max? Or is it actually heroic that he's giving up his chance to go back home?
Well, I think the problem there is that he has no, when he goes back home, there's nothing to go to. Remember, his family's all been killed by the Hulk.
Right.
So it's like, well, no, I got one thing left him, to do my life before I die. Let me just do this one good thing that I messed up on.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. But at the same time, I keep going back to the fact that I think it's supposed to read as, yeah, well, he's being heroic because he's sacrificing. But I don't read it that way. I really do read it as him. I don't know. It's so weird because, like, okay, I guess you should try to atone for past mistakes.
Yeah, well, maybe he's just making it personal. He doesn't care about anything else. The only thing that he's got left, he's like, you know what, this is it. I don't care. I'm going to do this no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of how I read it too. But then I go back to, okay, well, is that in any way heroic? I don't know. Maybe old man Logan's not a hero. When you think
about it. I don't think he ever claimed to be either.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of people look at him as a hero. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's definitely an interesting thing to think about. Yeah, I had forgotten about that Forge of Valor. We saw that in issue 2, right, of Dead Man Logan.
Yeah, I think it was 2, or maybe the end of 2. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2. I read the books a while ago, so I'm trying to. I got all the issues combined, you know, like in 1, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Let's take a quick look here. But yeah, I want to say it happened in issue 2. Let's take a quick peek here.
But I agree with what you said, though. I mean, I like the story. And like you said, the artwork was kind of like, you know, but I still enjoyed it. I guess if you got a good story, I guess I'll just go with it, you know?
Yeah, definitely is issue 2. Forge takes him through, and old man Logan says, it's home. And he says, I can't, not yet. And he turns up. So that's interesting, not yet. Like, maybe you'd be willing to go back at some point. But yeah, I think it all comes out of guilt. Like, he can't let it go. You know, he can't let the fact that Mysterio fooled him go, and he's got to, you know, stop that version of reality from happening.
Right.
You know, no matter what it takes.
Well, so. I just thought it was funny how they make fun of Mysterio in the whole series. They're just like, you know, this guy got his butt kicked like all the time by Spider-Man of all, you know, characters, all the heroes. And he's like,
Yeah, that's
because he could do this, but it's like, how come he never did it before?
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be this weaker version, but he nearly takes out the Avengers. That's what I was kind of wondering too. And I guess he does right before he starts fighting them. He does. He does take another shot of Regenerex or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
So you wonder if that. You know, how much that helps, even though it shortens his lifespan. But I don't know. I just think this is She-Hulk and Iron Man and Captain America. You'd think they'd be able to handle
it. You would think. But it was also the crazy She-Hulk. It wasn't the normal one we know. It was, which was
yeah,
savage.
That's true. So, all right. Well, let's move on to the next book. Let's see. Let's talk about Doctor Strange. This is number 10. It's actually Legacy number 400. This is a very important book, actually, and there's a lot of different stories in it. The main one is by they're all written by Mark Waid, but he has different artists. And the main one is drawn by Jesus Saiz. So basically, what's been going on in Doctor Strange is in this new version from Mark Waid, in issue 1, Doctor Strange loses his powers. And he goes to Tony Stark because he, over a period of months, he has completely lost any connection to his magical powers and mystical realms and all that sort of thing. So he goes to Tony Stark and he's asking him for help. And he says, you know, normally this happens from time to time where, you know, Earth kind of starts losing its magical energy. And Tony's like, well, what do you normally do? Well, I normally go to other dimensions, magical dimensions. I bring back artifacts. I, you know, learn, talk to the magic users in those dimensions and kind of learn new stuff. And Tony's like, well, I can't see any different dimensions, but I can send you out to space. Like, you know, this is a big universe right here in our own dimension. There's got to be other magic users out there, you know, other sorcerer supremes that sort of protect their own planets. And so Tony, Doctor Strange's like, nah, that's not really my thing. And Tony says, well, you know, if you're the protector from all, you know, all the bad magical stuff, and anybody finds out that you don't have your powers, like Earth would be in trouble, right? Can you really say no? And so Doctor Strange is like, you're right. So he goes out there, he meets other people, other magic users, and he eventually learns new spells and he learns new skills and he gets new artifacts and comes back to Earth. And supposedly he has powers again. But in the background of the stories, we've been seeing that there's this this other thing that's at work. It's not just that his powers ran out or he got burnt out, as he told Tony, and as Tony said to him, you know, in terms of it's not any kind of psychological burnout, you know, it's more like an engineering problem. You know, an engine gives out after, you know, so much usage. But actually what happened is some entity or some group took his powers away. And what has been a theme throughout the entire series is that magic has a price, right? Like whenever you use magic, you have to pay it back in some way, use that little bit of power. And you know, the way it's explained is when he says, you know, by the hoary hosts of Hoggith or you know, whoever, that he's borrowing a little bit of power from that entity and he's got to pay that power back. And so he doesn't really think that that applies to him anymore, because he figures, well, what I can do is I just can keep going and finding new people to gain power from, you know, and there's no finite number of people, and I can just continue on. Kind of arrogant, but it sort of suits who Dr. Strange is, because that's who Stephen Strange has been all his life. So at the end of issue 9, we see that the Ancient One, the being who actually trained Dr. Strange, shows up and is now, the roles are going to kind of be reversed. Dr. Strange needs to teach him, because he doesn't have any magic anymore, apparently. So as this story starts off, at least there's multiple stories, but the first one here, and the Ancient One basically explains that, yes, he had transcended. He was kind of on the astral plane, an immortal being, and he was basically snatched from behind and attacked by a couple of guys that literally cut out the magic and symbolically like cut into the back of his skull, took out a piece of his brain that supposedly contained all of his magic knowledge. And now that he doesn't have that anymore, he's not going to be able to even stay alive. He's used all his strength to come back to Steven and say goodbye, basically, because without the knowledge of those spells that he's used to keep his frail body alive, he's been alive for thousands of years. He's going to die right there in front of Dr. Strange. So immediately Dr. Strange cast a spell, the protection of Nivalor. So again, he's borrowing power from somebody else to preserve him. And then he even gives some of his own life force, maybe a week of it, to stabilize the Ancient One and keep him alive. And then what he does is he struggles over that next week to teach the Ancient One, right? And the student has become the teacher, and he's got to basically start giving him back the knowledge that was cut out of him, so that he'll be able to keep him alive. But Stephen Strange talks about what a struggle it is, because he doesn't have the patience that the Ancient One, you know, always had, and you know, Ancient One's body is very weak, and you know, he tires. But in the meantime, when he's sleeping, Strange is using the Eye of Agamotto to try to probe him to find out who's this person that has been attacking, right? It's been attacking me on all these different fronts. Seems like trying to steal magic. They used a former student, Casey Kinmont, who we saw actually was pretending to be Dr. Strange himself for a few issues, that was kind of used as a pawn by the same group or entity to kind of as a threat to Dr. Strange. We saw Baron Mordo was working for these people, this group, whoever it is. And they're all being told this is happening because of the price that I'm supposed to pay, that Dr. Strange is supposed to pay. And he's like, it's nonsense. Magic does have a price for others, but not for me, not anymore, not after all I've learned recently. So again, there's that arrogance, right? He thinks, okay, yeah, magic does have a price, but instead of paying that price, I'm just going to continue learning new things, getting new artifacts, getting, you know, learning about new entities that have magical power. I mean, it's almost like it's a pyramid scheme, like a Ponzi scheme for Dr. Strange, right? Like, yeah, I'll use this person's power or this entity's power or this artifact's power until they won't give me any more because I'm in debt to them, but I'll just find new avenues to gain power from, right? He's never paying the bill. So once he gains enough knowledge and he's gathered enough of the residual energy, that's left behind in the Ancient One's brain by the people that attacked them. He's able to open a portal to find out who this mysterious magic accountant, as he calls it, is. And he opens the doorway and he steps through. And as far as he can see, there's just a bunch of these sort of hybrid humanoid squid creatures that look like right out of Office Space with their short sleeve button up shirts and ties. And they're all sitting at little desks typing away on computers. And again, this goes on for as far as the eye can see. And Strange is looking around just like his jaw's almost on the ground. He's like, what the heck is going on? What is this place? Nobody can really answer him. They're all too busy working. So he sees a door that says T. Hothrin, head accountant. And he walks in, Strange walks in and meets this T. Hothrin and says, oh yeah, come in. We need to talk. I've been expecting you. And Strange is like, is that why you baited me with the Ancient One? Who are you? And Hothrin says, didn't you read the sign on the door? You're aware of the rules. Magic costs. It always costs. And someone has to balance the books. And Strange is like, I'm in no mood for cute or rules. And Hothrin says, well, not yet, but we need to discuss something. And I prefer that we do it civilly, because regardless of what you seem to believe, you owe a big debt, right? And we need you to pay it immediately, or the penalty is going to be unimaginable. And they start sort of fighting, but Strange can't really fight back because Hothrin takes his magic, like right there. He's like, look, I decide how magic is allotted. I'm the one that doles it out. I'm in charge. I'm the accountant. And he shows that a bunch of former Strange allies have been captured by them. Wong, Canna, Selma. And Strange is like, okay, here we go again with people that I know paying supposedly the price for my debt. So Strange isn't really in the mood to talk, and there's a little more back and forth. And Hothrin, just like, you don't have any magic left. I'm controlling all your powers. What do you have left? Strange is like this. And he physically attacks him. He's like, Wong taught me martial arts back in the day. So I'm just going to take this guy out the old fashioned way, if you will. And once he does that, he releases his friends. And he's like, okay, let's get out of here before this guy wakes up. But they want answers. And so when Hothrin comes to, he's like, listen, you need to understand that we had your friends here and they were going to be delivered to the people that you owe a debt to if you remain too stubborn to cooperate, because they're using the earth as collateral. And Strange is like, what are you talking about? He's like, look, magic has a price. What do you think that means to you? And Strange says, well, it's kind of like sorcery 101. Every time you invoke the name of a higher being, you're basically borrowing some magic from them. And, each of that time you borrow, there's some sort of consequence to that. And Hawthorne's like, yes, exactly. And you're one of the worst abusers of the system, right? You borrowed and borrowed and borrowed, and they've all decided that you weren't paying them back fast enough. And I tried to help you by taking your magic away and paying them back while Strange wasn't using his powers for those months, like it was described in the first issue. He was paying off some of his debt. But Strange didn't know that. So in a way, I mean, yes, it's sort of his fault, but in the way, sort of not. He didn't know about any of this, which that's sort of problematic, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, Hothrin says, but that wasn't good enough for you, because like a spoiled child, you fled to other unknown worlds and you started getting new magic and drawing new power, not just from familiar entities that you had used before, but now new alien entities. And all of a sudden you doubled your debt, and now people have run out. Like the accounts have lost their patience. They've run out. They've demanded your entire planet. The entire planet of Earth is what they're demanding in payment for your debt. And Dr. Strange is like, who's arrogant enough to claim that I owe them anything? And Hothrin says the Faultine, Dr. Strange, or Stephen Strange. Dormammu then shows up, says my race, dark dimension. And this is where things are, starting to look real bad. Steven's like, okay, he doesn't have the power of the elders, but he's pretty bad. And It looks like they turned you into an errand boy, Dormammu. You're here to deliver a warning. You know, I'm a lot more powerful than last time you met, so you're not really very much of a match for me anymore. So you might want to let the Faltine know that Earth's under my protection. So why don't you give him that message? And Dormammu says, well, why don't you give it to him yourself, Strange? And he transports Strange and his allies back to Earth. And they see that the Faltine are already there, and they're just laying siege. There's fires as far as the eye can see. There's tons of Faltine basically roaming the streets, destroying things. And everybody obviously is shocked. And they say, well, what's the contingency plan? What are we going to do now? And Strange is like, against this? What do we do against this much raw power? I'll tell you, we lose. And to be continued in the next issue. So it's a great story, and I love the whole idea of there's always a price to pay, and Strange knows that, and he's kind of been cheating the system for a long time because it goes back to the arrogance that's sort of inherent in his character. The only thing, and it's the tiniest little nitpick that I don't like about it, is the fact that Strange has been around for how long, and the Ancient One he's been around for how many years, and they never knew about this accounting. There's actually an accounting firm that can take your powers away. That's the only thing to me. And I know it's a retcon and just nobody had thought of this before. And in order to make this work, it's got to be something that always existed, that Mark Waid sort of, you know, thought up, but is retroactively saying, okay, these accountants always existed, and Strange's debt finally just got to the point where the people that he owed repayment to just weren't going to put up with it anymore. But it doesn't really, you can't think about it too much because it doesn't make sense. Like, one of them would have heard about this at some point or another. And then the other part of it is, if there is this accounting firm, this magical accounting firm that keeps track of who owes who and so on, like, what's to say they can't be manipulated into giving this being power or taking power away from that being? You know, it doesn't, again, you just can't think about it too much, but it's an interesting idea and it's a great story. I mean, it kind of goes to the whole thing of, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. It's, you know, there's always a equal and opposite reaction. There's, if you give, there's going to be take. If you take, like Dr. Strange has been doing for years and years, taking magical power, he's going to at some point have to give. So it makes total sense why he lost his power in the first issue, because he had to give something up. But now what happens? Now that they're taking the Earth basically for his payment. So that's pretty interesting. The only other thing is, I'll say, is Jesus Saez's art is next level. Like, it is absolutely gorgeous art. It's just wonderful line work. I love the dynamic action that he draws. I love the way he lays out the pages. He doesn't do a lot of insets as far as panel layouts and things like that. His panel layouts aren't super dynamic, but he will do like montage pages, and he really plays with the depth of field, whereas, you know, sometimes things are really up close, or one character will be really up close and everybody else will be further back, and it gives depth to the page. He's really good at that. And you can really see that when he draws the page, where there's like thousands of these sort of drone, half squid, half humanoid, magical accountants typing away. I mean, that had to take a long time to draw all that. So yeah, the art is really spectacular. The colors as well are done exceptionally well. So what about you, Jay? What did you think about this issue?
I was gonna say that it's your fault, because I like Dr. Strange, but I never really collected him or, you know, read the books. But that, because of this series, I'm gonna read them all because they're all pretty awesome. The story is just phenomenal. I never really thought about, you know, going that route with Dr. Strange. But yeah, the story itself was just it was awesome. And you said the artwork is great, because when they're talking to the the key collector, each panel guy zooms into his face to show how angry he is, saying that, no, you have to pay. You know, no way around it. You got to pay.
Yeah, and we all know how terrible bill collectors are. When you owe money, they'll hound you.
Oh yeah. So this is. But yeah. I'm definitely a fan of this series. Like I said, you know, I've collect the Avengers. I got the first series, and ever since I got the fifth, sixth, and going on forever. But Doctor Strange himself, I never collected the book because I just wasn't that interested. But this run here is pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I've heard that from a lot of people. A lot of people talk about how great Mark Waid's Doctor Strange run is, just because it goes back to the the roots of the character being so arrogant, like I've talked about, because I'm kind of the same way. I've never been a Doctor Strange fan. Like the Steve Ditko stuff and the extra dimensional and the magic stuff, it's just never interested me. But I think for the first time ever, this idea of debt and what you owe. So yeah, I've been reading it from issue one, and it's been really good. I mean, seeing him out in space was so different. So yeah, I'll definitely have to hook you up with the first nine issues.
Oh yeah, definitely, I'll definitely read them. But like I said, I've always been a fan, but you know, you always saw him as untouchable. Like whenever you read Doctor Strange, he's this awesome being, you can't touch him. He's always part of the group that does elite stuff, like get rid of the Hulk and do this and do that. It's like, oh, this guy's so arrogant, but they never really like put it there. But this book shows it, like, hey, this guy's just, you know, he's stuck up. He knows he's better than you. He lets you know he's better than you.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to the next book we're going to talk about. It's Man Without Fear. So, you know, this series has been a little problematic for me. This is the last issue. We've talked about all four previous issues. It's written by Jed McKay. The art is by Danilo S. Bayruth. Colors by Andres Mosa. Letters by Clayton Cowles. So just to kind of remind everybody, so Charles Soule, who's we're going to talk about another of his Daredevil books. We're going to, on Marvel Mondays, we always talk about a Charles Soule Daredevil book, and we will until we get through his entire series because I think it's masterful. He wasn't even ready to leave Doctor Strange, but I guess – I don't know if it was sales-wise or just editorial. They decided it was time for a change, and Chip Zdarsky was going to come on the title. And there had sort of been this tradition from the way Brian Michael Bendis left the book, and then I'm trying to remember who came on. Mark Waid came on. And then from Mark Waid to Charles Soule. So Bendis left Daredevil in a tough spot and walked off the book. Right. Like, I mean, he knew he was leaving, but the point being, he kind of left it with a cliffhanger, you know, kind of a way for the writers to challenge each other, you know, kind of a fun thing to do amongst peers. So Bendis leaves Daredevil Matt Murdock in a really tough spot, and then knowing he's leaving the book, and hands it off to Mark Waid, and Mark Waid has to come in and figure out, okay, how do I get Matt out of the predicament that Bendis left him in, and then start telling the story I want to tell. And then Mark Waid does the same thing to Charles Soule. And Charles Soule's got to come in and figure out, okay, how do I get Matt out of the predicament that Mark Waid left him in, and then tell my own story? And so Charles Soule, and each time it was tougher and tougher, you know, like somebody left him in prison. You know, Mark Waid left it where the whole world knew that Matt Murdock was Daredevil. Excuse me. And it was just a really tough situation. So each of the guys were upping the stakes. So Charles Soule leaves the book, and he has Matt Murdock basically hit by a truck all over again, right? Like that's how he got his powers, got hit by a truck that was hauling this radioactive waste, toxic waste, what have you. One of the canisters hit, you know, sprayed him in the face, and he ended up getting his powers, but it blinded him. And so that's how Soule left it for Zdarsky. And I've talked before about this, but for whatever reason, Marvel decides to do this 5-issue weekly series called Daredevil Man Without Fear, written by Jed McKay with art by Danilo Bayruth, that basically takes Matt Murdock, takes Daredevil from where Charles Soule left him, and just kind of fixes it, if you will. So Zdarsky doesn't have to come on and extricate Matt from death, basically bring him back to life, resurrect him. Cause at the end of Charles Soule's run, Matt's like dead on the table at the hospital. There's like flatline. Right. And so, and again, I don't know personally, I don't know that Chip Zdarsky said, no, I don't want to, you got to fix that. Like if you went to Marvel, if Marvel decided they wouldn't, like they bring him back to life in you know, the first issue of Daredevil Without Fear by Jed McKay, you know, basically they said, yes, he did flatline, but they're able to shock, you know, give him the shock or whatever, get his heart going again. Get a, you know, put the paddles clear and all that. And in this series, this Man Without Fear series, we've seen Matt basically going through physical therapy. And, you know, at first he decided he wasn't going to be Daredevil at all anymore. He was going to give it up. His body's too bruised and broken. It's like even his scar tissue has scar tissue. And he's been struggling to decide, you know, can I keep being Daredevil? And I don't know, it hasn't been particularly good. The art isn't particularly good either. And it's like, I feel like the only reason this 5-issue weekly series existed was to just bridge the gap so Zdarsky didn't have to overcome the challenge. So, but if this is what they were going to do, like if this was what, how Marvel wanted to bring him back and say, okay, he didn't, even though, you know, Charles Soule did leave it where he flatlined, then, we'll just fix it in a quick, you know, 5-issue weekly, and then Zdarsky can come on and start telling the story he wants to tell. Zdarsky didn't want to do that. Was he being lazy? Just didn't like the idea of it. Like, I don't understand. Everybody else went along with it. I'm just having a hard time. Like, I don't get it. And remember that it's not like Charles Soule could have just said, okay, I'm going to kill Daredevil. I'm going to flatline him. And editorial didn't know anything about it. They approved it. They approved his script and said, okay, yeah, I'm going to leave him dead. And then Zdarsky's going to come on the book and, you know, he'll resurrect him. Zdarsky just as easily could have said, okay, well, yeah, he was dead for a couple seconds, but then they were able to bring him back. So I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. And I tried not to think about that too much when I was reading the series, because I didn't want to say, okay, I don't like the series because of that. But it's just that there's not much that happens in this series. In this 5th issue, basically we see Matt going through the kind of the last of his physical therapy and thinking back and looking at different aspects of his personality, the fear that he always feels now is embodied by a version of Daredevil in the first costume he ever wore, the yellow and red one, that's telling him, oh, you can't, it's the voice of fear telling you can't do it, it's too dangerous, you know, blah blah blah. And he's hearing the voice of his dad reminding him continuing asking him the question, what is pain for? Why do we, you know, what is pain for? Why do we feel pain? And eventually something kind of snaps in Matt. He remembers his dad teaching him that lesson, to use the pain as fuel. You know, you can't let the fear rule you. And I always think of pain as, okay, it reminds us that we're alive. That's what pain is for. It's to remind you that you're still alive. If you're feeling pain, then at least you're still alive. If you weren't feeling pain, because you're not alive anymore. And so at the end of the issue, Matt has left his hospital room, but not by like checking himself out, but gone out the window. And we get the dialogue boxes saying, I am Daredevil and I am afraid, but I'll die before I let them have my city. So I don't know, in a way it brought Matt back, but it weakened him. And certainly Zdarsky's not getting Daredevil, you know, at the beginning of his series, where if you've read it, where, you know, Matt's in a really strong place, either mentally or physically. And so again, that serves to make me wonder, well, okay, then why did we need this series? That's the part that I just don't get. Is it worth reading? I couldn't even go that far. Maybe if the art was really good, I'd say it is. But I feel like all it did was just show us, okay, Matt's not dead, and he is still kind of messed up. You know, he's weak of mind, weak of spirit, weak of body right now. So how did that really fix anything for Zdarsky to come in, right? It put him in a different place than that Charles left him. Charles left him dead, but he's still not, you know, at ground zero. You know, he's still weaker than you normally would think, but I guess that's just where Zdarsky wanted him. Like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I feel like I need some answers, and I've reached out to Chip Zdarsky before to ask him to come on the show. I like his Daredevil run. I think the best thing he's ever done. I haven't been a big fan of Zdarsky in the past. Some of the things that he's done, his, like his Spider-Man life story, I didn't really care for. And I felt for a long time when I hear people's, you know, hear his name over and over with Sex Criminals and such, and oh, he's so good, he's so good. And I've read his stuff and I haven't liked it. I mean, the Spider-Man life story, at least I could read it. I remember his Howard the Duck. I got through the first issue, didn't like it, but I always give a series at least 2 issues. So I picked up the second issue. I couldn't even finish the second issue. Like, I just absolutely hated it. And I rarely will do that. Like, if I pick up a comic that I don't like, I'll at least finish the comic and I just won't read the next issue. I couldn't even finish Howard the Duck. I couldn't get past like 3 pages of it. It was so awful. And so I just don't buy Zdarsky stuff because I haven't liked it. And then everybody was telling me his Daredevil run was so good. It was so good. I had to try it. And yeah, I got to admit, it's pretty darn good. So I have wanted to have him on the show. And again, I mean, anybody that listens to the show knows I'm not going to bring him on and then attack him. You know, I'd be happy to talk about Stillwater, his independent book that's coming out right now that I think is great. And let's talk about your Daredevil run, which is also great. Won't talk about Howard the Duck because I don't have anything to say about that. So why am I going to bring it up? But I do want to ask him, like, what's up with Man Without Fear? Like, you know, and I would never ask him in any sort of attacking way, but I'm just curious, like, what was the thought process? Why didn't you start your, you know, Daredevil issue one with Matt on the table and bring him back yourself? Like, why does this series exist? Because I got to say, I don't see a lot of the value in this. And I'm not saying that Jed McKay, that his work here isn't technically good. And as much as I don't care for the art style of Danilo Bayreuth, I don't think it's that his art is, you know, the worst art I've ever seen. I mean, his line work's okay aesthetically. I just don't really care for the style. And it's another one where everything is just laid out for the most part very generically. All we're getting in the pages is just, you know, rectangle after rectangle after rectangle. There's literally nothing dynamic about the page layouts. All the camera angles are pretty straightforward. Everything is pretty much straight on, you know, at a medium distance. And it could be that he's just newer, you know, and he hasn't evolved on those techniques. And that's fine. It's not technically bad art. There's just nothing special about it. And then I kind of feel the same way about the plot. And it's not that I think Jed McKay is a bad writer, but what's he even supposed to do? Like he's given a pretty tough job of taking the end of Charles Soule's story, saying, okay, here's where Charles left Matt, and here's where editorial told me to leave Matt so that Zdarsky can pick it up. I've got 5 issues to go from this point to this point, basically. And those points aren't very far apart, and you're giving me 5 whole issues I've got to fill with it. This could have been a one shot. Like if Zdarsky just didn't want to start his run with Matt on the table, you could have done a one shot, you know, and you could have done something like, okay, while Matt was dead, his life flashed before his eyes. And you could have just done like a, you know, 40 page one shot that just recapped some of the big events in Daredevil's life. And at the end, he gets shocked and his heart starts beating and he's alive. And then Zdarsky's issue comes out. Like, I don't know. I don't understand why this series exists, because it doesn't really seem to be much to, it doesn't seem to be a reason for it to exist. So anyway, I'll shut up and we'll hear what Jay has to say about this series. Maybe he got something more out of it or sees value in it that I don't.
Well, to be honest with you, I bought the series when it first came out. And when I saw it on the list, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, not that story. Because I actually waited for those books to come out. And I was like, expecting more out of it. I never saw it. I think if they would have did just one graphic novel and called it good, it would have been fine. Or just kept in the series. It didn't make sense. Like you said, why they did a separate story. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, especially on they released it weekly.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Every week I was like, oh, maybe it'd be better this time. I'm like, nope. We're still working on the how to walk. That's cool. And next week is like, oh, so now he's got the fear of his old suit watching him. Okay, cool. And then it's like, so we're going with the Batman thing. Why did he fall so we can get back up, Bruce? Okay, cool. I got that.
Yeah.
I didn't get it yet. I don't know. It was okay, but it's like, I expected more. I guess when I first got it, I expected a lot more out of it.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry I made you. Well, you probably just thumbed through it then. You probably didn't read
it. Oh, yeah. I was like, I know this story. I already know what's happening.
Yeah, I'm not reading it again. Yeah, we're definitely on the same page here because You're right. You're right. I mean, the fact that it's five issues of him, okay, going through physical therapy and learning how to walk again. Did we really need five issues of that? Like I'm saying, like it could have been a one shot.
I think you just could put it with the regular series and kept it going. It would have been just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I get that. Like if Charles wanted to end his run where, okay, the last panel of my run is basically a picture of a flat line for Matt, and Zdarsky didn't want to start his run right there, I can understand. I can understand as a creator wanting, you know, Soul wanting his last panel to be a flat line. Hey, I left Matt dead and I was done with the book. And Zdarsky not wanting to start right there. I get that too. I totally get that.
Right.
So you're going to give us a one shot to do this or whatever. Or like I said, give us a one shot where maybe he doesn't learn to walk, because that's boring as hell to watch.
Yeah, the story was not that great. Like I said, I seen the 50 cents pile and it's on Comic Shop. That's how good the story is. I'm like, oh, it's already in there. Cool. I just paid two something on this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely could find this in a quarter bin. And I would say if you could pick up this whole five issue series for a quarter each, say $1.25, it's not worth it. Don't even pay a quarter. it's really that bad. And it's too bad because I loved Charles Soule's run. And like I said, the Zdarsky run is really good. So, and when you think about the people that came before that, you know, I talk about Mark Waid and Chris Somney. I mean, that run won Eisners. Before that, you had Bendis, which I'm not a fan of Bendis, but from all accounts, he did a great run. It's like, man, you're talking high quality on Daredevil for a long time, and then you just have this kind of stinky turd right in the middle. It's not a good look. So, anyway, let's move on. We'll talk about Marvel Knights number 6. So this is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Marvel Knights. They put out this the series, which was kind of interesting. It's written by Donnie Cates. We have pencils by Kim Jacinto and Travel Foreman, inks by Kim Jacinto and Richard Friend, color art by Matt Milla, and letters by Corey Petit. And basically, the story started off, and there's no heroes. They've all forgotten that they were around. And Bruce Banner, of all people, has been the key to kind of awakening memories, because he wakes up every morning and he's got these notes that are scribbled backwards of these names and these symbols and whatever. And basically what's happening, he's turning to the Hulk in the middle of the night, and the Hulk still has his memories, and the Hulk still knows that about who these heroes are, what their secret identities were. And he knows that the world is not the way that it's supposed to be. And so he looks in the mirror and he's writing these notes, and that's why they're mirror images. When Bruce gets them the next day, everything is written backwards in this mirror image. So he convinces Frank Castle, who is a cop now, obviously used to be the Punisher, that, hey, there's something going on. There's people out there that were heroes. They don't remember who they are. And then Castle manages to get through to Elektra and Daredevil. And Daredevil, Matt Murdock, actually had already sort of been reminded of this by, of all people, the ghost of Karen Page. Like, supposedly that's what we're told. And they're all told to seek out T'Challa, Black Panther, who we saw at the end of issue 5 when he is met up with Bruce Banner, Elektra, Daredevil, and Frank Castle attacks them. And the big bombshell that's dropped, because these four people are trying to figure out what happened, Black Panther tells them, well, you guys did this. You used a weapon that I had, or a device that I had that could erase memories, and you're the ones who used it to erase everyone's memory so people would forget that there were ever superheroes. You're the ones that that did it. And meanwhile, we also find out that the Kingpin still has memories of this, and so does Dr. Doom, and they are the ones that are in possession of this this device that can erase weapons. And Dr. Doom and Kingpin sort of got in it last issue, and the Kingpin actually beats Dr. Doom and drops him off the side of a building. So that's where this this issue sort of starts. And those four heroes, Elektra, Punisher, well, I guess Karen Page isn't really a hero, but she's just a ghost, and Daredevil, they're trying to make peace with Black Panther. And they're saying, why would we do that? We're the ones that are trying to fix this. And Black Panther's like, I fought you because I wanted to stop you from erasing us from the world. But yeah, I guess it makes sense that you would have to kill me to stop me, but you're here now, and it looks like you're trying to set things right. So let's figure out what's going on. And so they find the place in the Kingpin's building where the device is being kept, and all along we've been told it's being guarded by this golden dragon, and it turns out what the golden dragon is it's the Sentry. The Sentry is the one who's guarding the weapon. But before they can get in there, the Kingpin comes in and tries to stop them. But that's a short fight. Matt's he's not learning how to walk right here. He's in good shape, and he lays the Kingpin out pretty quickly. So once they get inside and they speak to the Sentry, what he tells them, and this gets a little bit Matrixy, if you've seen that trilogy. And the Sentry tells them, first he shows them why they did it. He shows them a possible future where basically the Earth is wiped out. And he's like, this is what having heroes and superheroes and supervillains, this is the end result. This is what's going to happen. And so, this is the world to come. And so you guys decided that to turn off the good, to turn off the heroes, because you're not just turning off the heroes, you're also turning off the villains. And so the Sentry tells them, yeah, you guys have been here before. And you know that I'm more powerful than you, and I will beat you. But I know that what's going to happen is that you're going to do what I'm telling you. You're going to walk out of the room, and you're going to allow me to hit the button on the machine that resets everybody's memory again, because you've all been here before. All five of you, you've been here before, and this is what happens every time. And they're like, "Wait, what?" So yeah, just right out of the Matrix, right? When Neo finds out, yeah, you've been here, whatever many times it was. I think it was in the hundreds or something. But the thing they latch onto is they say, "Wait, did he say five?" Because like I said, you've got Elektra, you've got Bruce Banner, you've got Punisher, you've got Daredevil, and you've got Karen Page. This time they've got Bruce Banner with them, and he hadn't ever been there before. That is the wild card. And so what Frank Castle does is he turns around and he shoots Banner, who obviously immediately turns into the Hulk. And none of the rest of the heroes, because they're all pretty street level when you think about it, they're nowhere near the power level of Sentry. But the Hulk is, and as soon as Bruce starts turning into the Hulk, Sentry's like, "Oh shit!" And sure enough, the Hulk basically tackles him, and they go flying out of the side of the building, and it allows the other heroes to reset the device. And the only other thing of consequence that I'll mention here is we find out this supposed ghost of Karen Page is actually from what they say here, she's like a subroutine that they wrote into the machine that would basically tell them, would continue to be like a beacon, if you will, so they could have a chance to come back and do this again and maybe make a different decision one time. So again, very Matrix-like, because there's something about that in the Matrix about their, with the equation for the Matrix about it, always being a remainder and not a problem that's easily solved, which always leads to that imperfection, which then reminds Neo to keep coming back, time and time and time again. So again, very, very similar. And they do have a discussion about whether, before they reset things, about whether they should or not. Like, should we? Because we've seen what the possible future could be if we do reset it. And so we don't get a straight answer on whether it's true about the whole Karen Page actually being an angel or a ghost that Matt prayed for and showed up to basically help him save the world, or if she really is a program or some sort of protocol written into this machine that Black Panther had and Reed Richards had invented to erase memories. Because they do reset everything, and we see the Spider-Man is back and Thor and Iron Man and all that. And as we head toward the end of the issue, Daredevil standing on top of a water tower, and Elektra comes up to him and says, "You don't really buy it, do you? The whole angel thing." that, you know, was really a ghost of Karen Page. And he says, I don't know what I believe, only that I still do, you know, I still do have belief. So for good or bad, everybody's back. All the heroes are back. All the villains are back. Elektra does say, so what, you know, what do we do now? The people looked up to us and we got to pretend that this didn't happen. And how do we know that that terrible future that we were shown still isn't coming? And Matt says, well, we do like we always do, right? We do our best every day, every minute of every day. We keep our eyes open and we just stay vigilant. Like that's all that we can do. So it ended up being an okay story. I kind of expected a little more, being that it was Donny Cates, for it to go all Matrix like that at the end with Sentry going, oh, you've been here before. You five have been here before. Here we go again. You know, one of those time loop kind of things. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but again, I feel if Marvel wanted to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Marvel Knights, I kind of wish it would have been a little better. Because the art, again, it's just okay. Kim Jacinto and Travel Foreman, again, they both have a very like real scritchy, sketchy kind of style. Art's not real clean. And I just feel like as important as Marvel Knights was, you know, how much it saved the Marvel comics from bankruptcy, and, you know, Jimmy Palmiotti and Joe Quesada busted their butts and did a lot of things and made a lot of things work that people said wouldn't work. It kind of deserved a bigger something, you know, and I feel like this is a series where it got a lot of attention the first couple issues, but then you didn't, after the first couple issues, you heard nothing about it. And it's because I think it didn't really get that well received, even, you know, saying it's by Donny Cates, who's one of the hottest writers in comics. It just, I don't know, it didn't really land for me. So anyway, what are your thoughts on this one, Jay?
Well, I didn't buy this series because I heard other people say that it wasn't worth it. So I was like, well, I just skipped it. And I'm glad you gave it to me so I could read it. And I'm kind of glad I didn't buy it because Marvel Knights, like Spider-Man, The Punisher, they're awesome. And then you get this, you're like, it's not really following the other books at all, really. The only thing that was kind of cool I did like was, you know, the Daredevil, Matt, he's a Christian. He's a Catholic. So he always goes to confession. So at the very end, he still has his faith. So even after all that, he still has faith. That's the only thing I really got out of it. And that is like, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that point because you're right. Like if you were a big fan of Marvel Knights back in the day, Marvel Knights Spider-Man, Marvel Knights Daredevil, Marvel Knights Black Panther, like this in no way ties into any of those storylines. It's none of the creators that did Marvel Knights back then. And that's what I'm saying. Like if you wanted to celebrate Marvel Knights, you know, it would have been cool. And it didn't even have to be five issues. You could have gone back to those same creators. Hey, give us one more story. Just give us one more story that you would have told in that era. It doesn't even have to be in modern time. You know, it doesn't even have to be in continuity. Just give us one more story from those same creative teams. That would have been great. That would have been real nostalgic instead of this, which like, why does this even have to be Marvel Knights? You know what I mean? Like, why couldn't this just be a story in regular continuity right now? Why? I mean, there's nothing about this story that makes it feel like Marvel Knights.
No.
Just because they stick the MK20 on the cover for Marvel Knights 20th anniversary. So another one that was mediocre. I wouldn't say it's not worth reading because it is an entertaining story. But I certainly wouldn't have paid, you know, cover price. If you can pick it up cheaply, if you can, you know, like on Marvel Unlimited, you know, if you have that, worth giving it a read, especially a lot of people like that, you know, Travel Foreman, Kim Jacinto art style. I just don't happen to be one of them. So
yeah, I always feel sorry for Sentry. He always gets put in little weird spots like, oh, here's Sentry. That's his big role. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, exactly. He's not that bad of a character. It's like, just, I don't think they're using very well until you get to the new stuff like Dark and Back in Black.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Like, we don't even get to see him fight. Like, when I saw that that Punisher was going to shoot Bruce Banner, and like, okay, now we have somebody who's at the same power level of Sentry. We can see a really cool fight.
Nothing.
No. Hulk just, you know, jumps at him and they both go flying out the side of the building. And I'm sure they fight, but we don't get to see it.
Yeah, it's lazy writing, I think.
Yeah, kind of weak. So anyway, let's move on to the last book. It's Daredevil number 20. As I mentioned, we always cover a Charles Soule Daredevil issue, and there's no no change in this particular episode. We are covering a Charles Soule issue of Daredevil in depth. So Charles Soule writing, Ron Garney artist, Matt Miller colors. We have Clayton Cowell on letters, and this is the last issue, or last I guess you'd say last issue of the purple storyline. It's the conclusion, and basically what's happened is, again, this is during the the Charles Soule era, where, you know, Daredevil's identity had been revealed to everybody at the end of the Mark Waid story. Actually, even before the end of the story, but that's where he left him. That Matt was in trouble. He was going to lose had lost his law license in New York, and was in danger of losing it in San Francisco, where he currently lived. And everybody knew his secret identity, so it was really hard for him to operate as Daredevil. And then the Charles Soule series started, and nobody knew that Matt was Daredevil anymore. Just for, like, from the end of one series to another, and we never knew why. And this is the story. This is how, because again, we were told it wasn't an alternate reality. It wasn't anything that had been done before, because, you know, previously we had seen where Doctor Strange had used his power to conceal somebody's identity. We saw in case of Spider-Man, you know, Mephisto was involved, and all those kind of things. And people were sort of guessing along, and Charles Soule was like, nope, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. That's not it. And so this is the story of how Matt got his identity back. So basically his old nemesis, the Purple Man is back, and he has decided he wants to get his final revenge on Daredevil. And he uses his purple children, who at various times we've been told that Purple Man will go and just decide to have a family, you know, use his powers to just make some woman fall in love and marry him, and he'll have a domestic life for a few years until he gets bored with it, and he'll kill his wife, he'll kill his in-laws, and walk away. You know, he's pretty sadistic like that. So over the years, he's sired some children, and they have the same powers as him, and you know, they're able to persuade people and make people do the things that he wants them to do. And so in order to boost up his own powers, he rounds up his purple children and creates and builds this device that can basically broadcast his power, his ability to make people do what he wants them to do, because normally he's got to be in the same room with them in close proximity to get people to do what he wants to do. But with this machine and his purple children hooked up to it, he's going to be able to have the entire world under his control. He's going to be able to amplify it. But at the end of issue, the previous issue, issue 19, we see that in his zeal to sort of play with Matt and play with Daredevil and sort of torture him, that he awakens the incredible willpower that Matt has, as Matt's able to break free of that control and basically beat the crap out of Kilgrave. And so that's where it ends in the previous issue. And so this one starts off, and again, this is all back in San Francisco, you know, happened, I guess you would say, after the last Mark Waid issue. And we see that Matt is swinging across the rooftops, heading back home, because when the Purple Man had taken Daredevil under his control, when he was toying with Matt, he had asked Matt what he wanted the world to be like, and Matt had said chaos. And so he's worried about Karen, he's worried about the woman he loved, and all those visions and everything that the Purple Man showed him. Did it really happen? Was it just in his mind? What did he, you know, actually see? And so he heads over to their apartment to find out what is actually going on. Meanwhile, back at the warehouse, where Purple Man is kind of laying there unconscious, the purple children are thinking about how they can help Daredevil, because he just rescued them. One brother is saying to another, well, you want to help Daredevil? And his brother says, well, it seems like the right thing to do. Like, he saved us from Kilgrave a bunch of times. And his brother replies, well, I know he did, but how, like, what can we even do? I mean, we're just kids, right? And Daredevil is saying, and I'm just speculating that they were involved, but it's the only thing that makes sense because nothing else really does. I mean, they do have the same power as Kilgrave, the Purple Man, the power to control people's minds. And when you have that power, and they had the means because the machine was still there, and why not use it, right? So the children say, well, if Kilgrave was using this machine to make Daredevil do bad things to all these people, then it really wasn't Daredevil's fault. But everybody's going to blame him, and it's going to be even worse because they know who he is. Everybody knows that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. But you know what? We can fix that. And they say, okay, yeah, we can even use the Purple Man. We can use our dad to do this, right? So it's almost like they're using Purple Man's machine against him. And Daredevil's thinking back on this and thinking, well, you know, I think they were just trying to help. But you know, when you're a kid, everything is sort of simple, and it's kind of an out of sight, out of mind thing. So let's say you're a kid and you're playing with your dad's watch and you break it. You know, as an adult, you would go to that person and say, hey, you know, I broke your watch. Let's fix the problem. But as a kid, you might just hide it because out of sight, out of mind. So what the purple children did is they just hooked up the Purple Man to the machine and broadcast all around the world. You don't know who Daredevil is. You don't know Daredevil's real name. Daredevil does good things. Forget everything else. Forget anything bad you think Daredevil ever did. Forget that you know what his real name is. Daredevil's a good guy. And so, you know, with the advent of this machine and using their father, the Purple Man's, you know, abilities to augment their own, they basically put the genie back in the bottle. And they're doing this as Daredevil's swinging across town to go check on Karen Duffy. And when he gets there to their house, she's cleaning up and he climbs in the window and says, you know, Kirsten, you're okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. You didn't let any of those people, you know, lay a hand on me. I was in the panic room the whole time. I hope those purple kids are okay. Matt's not here right now. And Daredevil's like, huh? Like, what? She says, Matt Murdock is not here. And Matt goes up and, you know, he puts his, you know, he's in his Daredevil costume, puts his hand on her cheek. Like, are you sure you're okay? And she like knocks his hand away. Go, why are you touching me? I think you should leave. And Matt, really confused, leaves. Right. And he's like, what am I doing? Like, what's going on here? And he thinks I could have taken my mask off right there, but I didn't. And I think about that. That's on my mind. But instead what he does is he goes to Foggy's house. And Foggy comes out on his balcony and says, hey, Daredevil, what's up? And he says, Foggy, you know who I am? He's like, yeah, I just said it. You're Daredevil. You okay? And right, you know, right then Matt's had enough. He's like, okay, either this guy doesn't know or I got to find out what's going on. And so he takes the mask off and Foggy's like, oh my God, Matt, what's going on? Is this a joke? Wait, I knew that. I've known you were Daredevil for years, but just now I felt like I didn't know. I just thought, well, here's Daredevil, a guy that does good things. Like, Matt, what the heck's going on? And so based on Foggy's reaction and him saying, yeah, Daredevil's just a guy who does good things, that's how Matt sort of pieces together what happened, right? This is probably what happened with the purple children. They put the genie back in the bottle, told everybody, you know, put that idea in everybody's mind, Daredevil's just a guy that does good things. But when Foggy asks him, hey, what's going on that night where these events happened, Daredevil says, I don't know, but you didn't know who I was. Kirsten doesn't know who I am. And Foggy's like, well, no, you didn't tell her. And Daredevil says, well, no, I needed to understand this, try to understand how it happened. What was the scope of it? And Foggy's like, well, I guess I understand that. Cause this is huge. Like it was just like somebody flipped a switch in my mind and I forgot. And Daredevil's like, I think I know what happened. Stay here. And Foggy asks him, well, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to do what Daredevil always does, right? He's going to try to fix it if he can. And so he goes back to the warehouse, but it's too late. The purple children have left. They've destroyed the machine. They tied up Purple Man. And so Matt calls in the authorities. They come and they take Purple Man away to some high security prison that's only going to hold him for, you know, a short period of time before he'll manage to break out like he always does. And Matt says, and I know he already did break out, because not too long ago he sent Elektra after me, he altered her mind and her memories, and you know, now we're both looking for him like you know we always do. But even the cops that came to take Purple Man away had forgotten my real name. And at least the good part of it was, at least the cops didn't think I was taking out criminals to pad my autobiography anymore. So, you know, that was good. And I liked that part. And the next couple of pages, we see Matt goes out on a like crime, anti-crime spree, where he's taking people out. What's my name? What's my name? And they're all just saying Daredevil, Daredevil, Daredevil. Nobody knows that he's not Matt Murdock anymore. And he says, you know, I hadn't done that in a long time, just tearing through the city, going after every bad guy I could. And I felt like I had been holding back, because I was worried that if I got involved, it would hurt the DA's case somehow, or it would come back on Kirsten somehow, because I got involved. And, you know, it was nice to just be able to cut loose and not worry about the fact that people knowing my secret identity would place people in danger. But as much as it felt incredible, I know that's not why I really did it, because I could have done that any night. But I just didn't want to go home to Kirsten. And then the scene shifts, because this entire Purple Man story is all being told in a confessional, like we were talking about in previous issues of Marvel Monday when we covered the first part of the Purple Man story. He's telling this to a priest, and the priest interrupts and he says, Matt, hold on for a second. You've been talking for ages, and I understand you have a lot to get off your chest, but are you actually going to confess anything? And Matt's like, wait, what? I just told you I almost killed the Purple Man, and I put half of the criminals in San Francisco in the hospital. And the priest is like, well, yeah, you did tell me those things, but you know what I didn't hear in your voice? You're not sorry, right? You don't feel remorse. Whatever brought you to me, whatever got you back in the confessional, I haven't heard it yet. And Matt, you know, he's like, yeah, you're right. What I actually feel guilty about is that I never told Kirsten what happened. I wanted her, you know, I had never wanted her to know that I was Daredevil, because it's too dangerous. And the priest was like, but you told Foggy right away. He's like, yeah, and he's still pretty mad about that. But I explained to him how I was going to make it all worth it. We'd have a plan to end crime in the city. But he's still mad at me. He won't even talk to me right now. He still is. But I still feel good. Like, I never told Kirsten, right? Like, I loved her. And I could have told her again, and it probably would have been okay, at least for a while. But eventually something would happen. It always does. And I knew, with her having forgotten, that this was the chance to protect her. You know, is it going to be a clean break? Like, move on, get out of her life. And you know, the truth is, I tell myself that I'm Daredevil, but, and I'm supposed to be the man without fear, but I was afraid. And when I had the chance to tell her the truth, I didn't. You know, I didn't take my mask off when I first found out, and I didn't go back and tell her later. Instead, what I did was I went back as Matt, and I broke it off with her. You know, I told her it was over. I told her I was sorry. I was going back to New York, and I needed to do it alone. And, you know, it broke her heart. And so the priest is like, so Matt, what was your sin? And he said, well, I lied, right? I took something away from Kirsten that she cared about. And I didn't even tell her why we broke up. I took away her expectations for the future and her happiness. I didn't give her any choice. You know, I was weak. And the priest says, well, you got to think about this. Did you save her life by leaving her? And clearly this priest has read previous Daredevil comics, because if there's anybody who you don't want to date, it's Daredevil. It does not end well, ever. You always end up dead if you're Daredevil's girlfriend. And the police, you know, by the priest, said, did leaving her save your life? And Matt knows it too. Yes, there's no doubt in my mind. Everything that's happened with Blindspot makes it more clear to me. Blindspot was prepared and trained. Kirsten wasn't. Yeah, she definitely saved her life by not going back. And so the priest says, okay, so you saved her life. You saved everybody in the world from Purple Man. And because of all that, you feel like you needed to confess? Wow, isn't Catholic guilt something, right? But Matt doesn't even want to, even knowing that, he still doesn't want to let himself off the hook. And the priest says, well, you ended a relationship with a wonderful woman, and you're not proud of it. And I don't think that's a sin. That's just human nature. And despite everything, you're still human. So I can't give you forgiveness for anything. You need to forgive yourself, because you haven't done anything wrong. And Matt just looks at him. He goes, okay, all right. You need some penance. You want me to give you some Hail Marys? Matt's like, okay, that'd be great. He says, all right, remember that big plan you told me you had for ending crime in New York City? Have you done it yet? And Matt says, no, I'm working on it. It's risky. He goes, okay, well, that's your penance. Go pull it off. Earn the sacrifice that you made. You gave up. It wasn't just Kirsten that gave up happiness. Matt did too. And make it worth it, basically. Otherwise, what was the point? What was the point of you not telling her, not giving yourself a chance to be happy, not giving her a chance to be happy? You know, you have lost. You lost. You both lost something. So make that sacrifice worth it. And as the priest walks away, he says, goodbye, good luck. I'll be here if you need me. So the next day, in the office of the district attorney, where Matt is currently working, he goes into his boss's office, to the actual district attorney's office, and says, hands him a file and says, this is something I've been working on for a while. It's sort of a plan to adjust the way city handles crime. It could change everything. I know I didn't get off on the right foot here. I screwed up the Ten Fingers case and I've been kind of absent, but if this works, all will be forgiven. And that's where the story arc ends. So I got to say that when I heard about Daredevil having his secret identity back and Charles Soule saying he did it in a way that had never been done before, there's no magic, there's no, you know, universal reboot or, you know, anything like that. It's not a deal with Mephisto. Man, I just had like, how the heck did this happen? I never would have thought of this. So kudos to Charles Soule. This is a really cool way to put the genie back in the bottle. It makes total sense. It's not any more far-fetched than any other crazy superhero Marvel story. And I think it works. I think it worked really, really well. And this is like one of my favorite, if not my single favorite stories in the whole Charles Soule run of Daredevil, is how he got Matt's secret identity back. It's really pretty awesome. The art, I mean, it's the same sort of, you know, high quality Ron Garney art that we've had for the entirety of the Daredevil run. It's a much more sketchy style than Garney's art when he first came on the scene. But based on the way Garney's art has really heavy blacks and heavy lines, and then the sort of really dark tones that Matt Miller uses in the colors, I've talked about it before, it gives you a real gritty sort of street urban feel to the art, which is perfect for Daredevil. It wouldn't work on, you know, a lot of, like, you wouldn't want to see a Superman or a Wonder Woman comic or an Avengers comic like this. I don't think it would work. It would feel too kind of dour. But for a Daredevil comic, especially with this kind of subject matter where you're talking about loss and sacrifice and what have you, it works really, really well. And the other thing using all these dark colors does is it really makes the reds pop. I mean, that's really the entire color palette of this book is white, black, and red, basically. I mean, there's almost, you rarely see green, if ever. Certainly not bright green. You don't really see blues either. It's more of a grayish or a purplish. So it definitely works. There's no bright colors here. And there's no bright days for Daredevil. So what did you think of this one, Jay? Had you read this purple story before?
Yeah, I like the story. I always noticed that, excuse me, if you look at a lot of old Daredevil stories, and it's usually kind of a good with a detailed storyline, he's always in the confessional. It's like that's where he, you know, tells, you know, the story, you know, through his point of view. And I like that. And just kind of funny how he kind of wrapped it up like, okay, nobody knows who he is and this is why. And like you said, it made perfect sense. But when I was like, well, how are they going to pull this one off? I was like, no more Mephisto, no more, because that was terrible. But it was put together perfectly, I thought. And like you said, Daredevil, I just like the character. And I like when it's dark and gritty like that. And can't think of the top of my head, but there are other books where he, in the storyline, where he's in the confessional, and that's usually one of the better stories. I don't know why they do that, but it seems like it works out for him.
Yeah, I think more so than any character that I can think of, Marvel, DC, independent, whatever. Daredevil's, Matt Murdock's religion, the fact that he's Catholic, ties into the identity of the character more so than any other superhero. I mean, look at Born Again, you know? I mean, he's always befriending nuns or priests, or, you know, Karen Page became a nun at one point. The right. Born Again paperback's got, you know, big stained glass. Even in the Daredevil movie, which I think is okay. It's not the best superhero movie ever. It's not the worst, but the one with Ben Affleck. I mean, I do very much dislike the Colin Farrell version of Bullseye, but yeah. even that one, there's a big fight scene takes place in a church.
Yeah. It's always around churches.
Yeah. So it's definitely something that's suits the character, and yeah, he's always befriending. And I love, I really like the Purple Man as a villain for Daredevil. He's somebody I would consider a Daredevil rogue in terms of, you know, one of that's the hero that I identify the Purple Man with most, is he should be going up against Daredevil. And part of the reason is because Daredevil, when you think about it, he's not that strong. I mean, his superpower is that his other senses are heightened. Obviously, he's got the radar sense. Even though he's blind, basically he can see. But I can see. I don't have superpowers. I can see. You know, obviously his hearing is better, and he obviously that helps him out. He can hear people in other rooms, and he can feel things, you know, with his super sensitive touch. But he doesn't have, like, you know, this uber amount of super strength. You know, he doesn't have these powers where you think of him as this really powerful character. He's just, you know, a really good fighter, kind of an Olympic level athlete with slightly heightened senses. But he certainly shouldn't be somebody who could go up against like a Thor or you know, anything, a Silver Surfer or these big powerful villains. And then you juxtapose that against Purple Man, who, when you think about that, okay, anybody that I come into contact with, I can make them do anything I want. That's like uber powerful. And so the fact that Matt is able to beat Purple Man time and time again, I just love that. I love the fact that the Purple Man is one of Daredevil's villains. And to come up with the Purple Man and the Purple Children as the way to put the genie back in the bottle, yeah, I thought it was inspired storytelling by Charles Soule. All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.